Sandra, we were exploring this insight that I had on the psychopath, and we now come to the third episode of that story. Just to recapitulate, the way I now look at the psychopath is in the same way that the body has a healing process when as something has become caught under the skin. Likewise, the mind, the psyche has a healing process in case something gets caught into your psychological skin. The skin of our body is composed of dead and dying cells, and the skin of our soul is composed of dead and dying reflexes. So why not extend this understanding further? So I described before that when people have traumatic experiences, they can be circumstantial or unintentional, or they're actually very abusive people who do that with intentionality so that they disrupt the psyche. And when people say sticks and stone can break your bones, but words can never hurt you, words can actually hurt you. They can actually break the mind in the same way that sticks and stone can break your bones. So we address that in episode one and episode two, where it was also evident at the moment that people are damaged psychologically. Part of them withdraws and another part takes over. And that's where I introduced this notion of when you have a splinter under your skin, the body fluids come around that splinter to protect the body against it, pressing away the body cells. And that serum, as it's technically called, that fluid, is then the beginning of the forming of a new growth, cell repair there. And for what I see in psychological trauma, it's actually the same. That there's a kind of fluid that comes in without cells, a kind of pseudo mind without consciousness. And that then starts to reflect on what happens in the environment. And in this way, people will have an emergency protocol, which is activated by the damage. And this is quite well described in Trauma-Based Mind Control by Fritz Springmeier. And it is then seen that a lot of people have hidden parts of them, which are triggered by circumstances and sometimes remain there. And I explained that you can then have the hidden part of the psyche, which is, let's say, hidden under the carpet, with two varieties: the one which is inactive, as something that has been repressed and is out of view. By the way, when psychics look at somebody, that's the first thing that they see. The more you repress it, the more it is at the edge of your aura, so for psychics to pick up. Most often they are healers, so that's a good idea. And the other possibility is that's under our carpet but active. That something responds to events in the environment, because that part is actually still connected to that. There's also the part where people have it come from out from under the carpet, they're being taken over by one of these alters or sub-identities. And in fact, a lot of people use that. As I mentioned, when you go from one country to the other, you speak one language or the other language. So these different psyche elements, these psyche subparts, or personae, as they're called, are actually interfaces for the soul into different settings. So basically, we're talking about the difference between people creating a persona, say, a specialized part of their interaction with the environment, But not everybody is aware of that. So there, we need to discern between the intentional creation of a persona or the unintentional, often traumatic, creation of a persona. And so now we can take that a step further, because we can look into what do we know about this difference between intentional and unintentional personas. When you go to a different countries, from your soul, you discover that you need to do things differently. So in a way, you do a rebirth. You go back to baby level. You absorb the new language. You absorb the new customs. You absorb the new way of dealing with food and clothing. And you behave accordingly. And remember that the psychopath does exactly that. They behave accordingly, but they're not connected to themselves. They just echo the environment. Narcissus and Echo are closely connected in the mythology. But in you're moving to another country, you're actually developing a new sub-persona. So that new serum, previously I called it the golem, that's the technical traditional term for these zombie-like psyche capacities. So essentially you start with a new slate, you start with a new golem, in which you can then train or program or accumulate the experiences of that country where you are now. You do the same when you change from one job to the other. You do the same when you go from one family setting to another family setting. That used to lead to quite a number of conflicts in the past with people getting married, and either the man or the woman going to a different family setting and suddenly being expected to fit into that process or protocol, which they didn't grow up with, and they don't know the hidden and secret codes, and they don't know the charged tensions that these people thrive on, and so on. By the way, these tensions that people thrive on is an element of the narcissistic and psychopathic, sociopathic mindset. They actually call that the narcissistic fuel. So we all have that capacity to create a new persona. And it is practical to add to that the notion of the persona is actually part of the mind. The mind is interface between the body and the soul. And what most people forget or ignore is that the mind is a relay station or a medium for information coming from the soul, and it is a relay for information coming to the environment. Most people know the mind only as a relay system for the environment, and actually there are quite a number of people who want to maintain that belief. And actually you could say that when the Pope and Descartes were talking about science, that the scientists were only allowed to use the part of mind which connects to the environment, the material world, via the body, while the Pope claimed to have monopoly of the part of mind that connects to the soul, which is our connection into the universe and your decision tree of freedom of choice. But then, of course, it's not surprising that that happened, because the Pope with the tiara claims to be owner of the planet Earth, all living beings on it, and their soul, which of course can never be the case, because the soul is where you connect to the universe, and there's nobody between you and the universe in that sense. So you need to learn to understand your soul. And once you do that, of course, you have an understanding that you can connect to the environment in different ways, and that you understand that the mind is the fluidum or the fluid which connects the soul and the body. I call it the information flow within the body, or the communication of the cells within your body, and they can adapt any kind of process that they find in the environment, mirror that, implement it, and work with that. So you can create different personae structures as a consequence of that. So now I want to go a level deeper, because when you see that there is a possibility to have an intentional creation of a sub-persona or an adapted kind of behavior, then we can also discern that from an unintentional emergence of a personality part, then we need to get a better understanding of how we can discern that, but also come towards an understanding of how we can address that. So in this third part of the story, I want to talk about the way that we can deal with these intentional and unintentional creation of different personae. And I want to do that by referring to the equivalent of it, that we are not talking about a persona as the behavior of somebody, but actually a part of that, which is the reflex. I already mentioned that the ego is the skin of the soul, which is composed of reflexes, in the same way that the skin of the body is composed of dead cells. When we talk about the skin, we talk about the anatomy, we talk about the material part of the body. When we talk about the mind, we talk about the reflexes, we talk about the information functional part of the body. But as I described in an essay called The Bones of Belief, that those are directly connected. That connection is also seen in what I described in the psychosomatic engine, that at a level of cell communication, you can see that the cells are material, chemical, electromagnetic, and informatic, so that the physical and the chemical part of that is what we call the body or the physiology, and the electromagnetic and the informatic is what we then call the psychology. So the physiology and the psychology map onto each other, and it's in that sense also that was able to understand that the healing process of the body with serum being formed has its counterpart in the mind with the golem being formed, as I call that psychological serum. And now we can also put that parallel a step further by going into the shift of personae, because what we're looking for in the healing of the psychopath is to reconnect the fragmented parts of the mind into the whole. So that means it needs to be reconnected to the soul, but that also means that the dysfunctional personae parts, in the past that used to be called possession, actually is a simply emergency robot behavior procedure, which comes in because the soul and the until then created mind doesn't know how to deal with the situation. But if a new persona is created out of shock, the connection between the new persona and the old persona has a kind of crumple layer between them, as a result of which, just as bones broken but not set properly, they cannot heal properly. Likewise, when the psyche is broken but parts of it is fractured, then the healing cannot take place properly as well, and these subparts cannot reintegrate with the whole, and they can, so to say, have a life of their own. But how that works we can better address by looking at reflex, and this is where I then want to shift to that level of understanding. I still talk about the repair of persona, subparts, personality substructures, but now instead of using a persona sub-entity or substructure, I will talk about the reflex. In talking about the reflex, it is easiest to recapitulate what the principle of freedom of choice formulates and what the bones of belief formulate. The bones of belief simply says that in the same way that the body forms our bones, likewise the mind can form reflexes. In the body it is a crystallized structure where the move cells is actually stalled, halted, and I've seen people where in their life they had so much tensions which they fixed in their muscles, that when you were massaging those muscles there were actually calcifications which has gotten into there, which means that the muscle had sort of gone into a state of shock for so long that it started to make bones between them. And actually, when you massage those muscles, you can hear that those crystallizations crack. That's also what the Rolfing massage does, in what Valerie Hunt was researching. So there is that transition between solid, liquid, gas, and plasma, the alchemy of our body. And depending on how our body functions, it will go more solid or more plasma, with the liquid and the gas stages in between. So in the body that's always going on, and the formation of bones is actually a very specific use of a fixation of the cell dynamic so that it can actually crystallize and as a result create fixed materials which gives a leverage for the muscle to pull on, as a result of which we have these paddles by which we can navigate in the world around us, arms and legs. In the same way as the body makes the bones, we also can make the reflexes. And going from the bones of belief story, I now shift to the science of, to the freedom of choice story. Because freedom of choice actually operates at the level of the light field. Pineal gland, head is where it starts. Then it goes to the hypophysis, which is the electric and magnetic, the neuronal and the hormonal part where we take the decisions, where we determine our relation of involvement in the environment, yes or no, or in a filtered way. That then sets the stage for the kind of internal experience that we have to digest. Which is called a belief, or if you hold it longer and more tenaciously, then it's called a conviction. So there are people who become convicts of their convictions. They are frozen in a mindset. As a result, they have no flexibility in how to deal with things differently. And that then leads to the formation of reflexes. You might already understand that in the creation of a belief and the fixation of a belief, becoming a convict of your convictions, that also means that it's not just the reflexes themselves, but the whole pattern of reflexes, the whole structure of reflexes, which is called a personality, is then thereby crystallized and defined as well. So we're talking about the creation of reflexes, the creation of patterns of behavior, the creation of patterns of conduct, and also the creation of personality types and styles. And people who have never moved tend to be more rigid. People who have had expat experience, I'm one of them, they have a much greater flexibility. People who actually change disciplines and change social environment or change social strata, I'm one of them too, have an added flexibility that they actually can realize that they can take on any role in society as is needed at that time. And there's also a possibility for people to near-death experiences do that. I've had some of that, that you realize that to be here or not to be here is actually a fundamental realization. So by knowing that you could be dead, being here has a totally different meaning. You're not caught up by your reflexes, your behaviors, your attitudes, your convictions, but you actually know that you have a choice in where you are, how you want to be, what you want to do, and what results you're looking for. Selfish one, unselfish ones. And that is also a kind of gauge for the kind of growth people can experience. Are they still in the womb, or are they in the egg, are they in the nest, or are they able to fly around? In that transition, some people actually are still at the first level. As I will describe separately, I now have resolved a freedom of choice by its four axes. There's the vertical axis going down, which is actually where information goes into the body to materialize. That's the essence of magic. The second axis is that you can go from what it does for you and how it relates to the environment, what it would mean for others, and what it will do for the universe. The second frontal axis. The third axis is that when you do it, you need you realize that there is an interplay, a give and take, in which there can be a balance only if what you offer in an exchange is met by an offer in exchange of the other. That's a circular, double circular process between you and the other. And the fourth axis is that what you do with another fits into the environment and also fits into the universe, as four levels of holographic embedding. And these levels of freedom of choice connect to what happens in the body when from the electromagnetic, from the light field in the head to the electromagnetic field in the neuronal hormonal system, let's call that, the immune system is part of that too. It goes into the chemical processor of your convictions, organ internal climate, and that then defines what kind of environments the cells have by which they can grow, yes or no, increase their speed or slow down, become larger, smaller, and so on. Means that the cells respond to the information, and that process of cells responding to information is actually the foundation of the reflex creation, and also the creation of habits and the creation of personality parts. So by understanding what happens at the reflex level, you can then see that when you do something with your body in the environment, that information of what you do in the environment goes back into the body as this is the setting in which I'm doing it. This is what is now happening. And this is what the outcome has become out of that. So when you do that, that information goes back and is stored in the memory, body memory, bone memory, cellular memory, DNA memory, and so on, depending on how new it is and how much it adds to the already existing information. But that also means that information is stored with four aspects: the action you do, the aim that you have with that action, the environment in which you do that, and the result that comes out of it for you and for the environment. The next time you do that, it can be triggered by the environment or can trigger by what happens within you. I already mentioned that in a previous episode. And that means that you then have an understanding of what happens in your body. And the next time you do it, the body says, well, actually, I saw you do that. Shall I do it now? The third time you do it, so to say, the body says, I now know how to do it. And the fourth time, the body does it for you, if you haven't intercepted it at any of these previous levels before. And it is that level which I now want to talk about, which I haven't talked about before, because this is the level where we can then go into the understanding not of just the creation of the reflex, but also what do you do when you are dealing with the dysfunctional reflex. And so in the fourth episode, we can bring that back to what do you do when you have a dysfunctional personality type. When you have a dysfunctional reflex, you most often will not know that, for the simple reason that the reflex is not a conscious activity. It's not a subconscious activity. The subconscious level is merely that you know what you want to do and sort of have a notion of how it could go. It is not at the unconscious level, because the unconscious is what happens in you, what happens in the environment, how do you attune between the two. Those things you have already done first time you did that action, but now by reflex, those levels of earlier exploration, decision making, making it operational, are all included. And the only thing that you will have is that you will have already done something, and most often the result is as desired, and you won't even notice. The things have become invisible. And in that way, a lot of people live their life in ongoing invisibility. A lot of what they do is done by reflex. Good morning, Mr. John. Good morning, Mr. Smith. Nice weather, isn't it? It's wonderful. Yeah, nice to see you again. Bye-bye. So there's a lot of rituals, procedures, protocols, which are the mental equivalent of the reflex, or social equivalents of the reflex. There are ecological, survival equivalents of the reflex. But most people are totally unaware of what's happening. They just know it as a sense of it is normal. But when things go out of kilter, that sense of it is normal is precisely the problem. People will experience that they have a disease because simply they have been living chronically in such a way by reflex that they haven't noticed that their body is actually suffering, or that the mind has been suffering, or that the social relationship has been suffering, or that the world has been suffering. We see a lot of that now. But most often people don't notice that because as the reflexes are invisible, they will be ignored. They will be often denied. And people tend to say, well, this is just normal. I'm normal. You're abnormal. What you're doing is abnormal. You're bothering me. No, they're just doing something, and the reflex system doesn't know how to cope with it. So the reflex system kicks back at the belief level, at the emotional level, say, well, there's something churning here. Please do something about it. And when people don't, it goes from the emotional level into the anger level. Please take a new decision. You need to take a new decision now. Now decide something new, because this isn't going right. And instead, people don't do that and become angry. They just add energy to the reflex, and that's where most of the wars originate. If people would listen to these signals, then they would realize that their feelings had turned into emotion. They would have realized that love had turned into anger. And they would have taken the decision to review what they're doing, to see why they are doing that, to realize that actually they cannot do that in that context, and they need to do something new. And that actually is the lead to the repair of reflexes. First of all, the reflex will only be noticed by the discomfort or the problem or the physical hurt or the psychological hurt or the criminality that arises out of it. But that doesn't change the reflex. You cannot change the reflex at the reflex level. Behaviorism basically gets people to do something else, hoping that the new reflex can resolve that, but they did not teach people how to undo a reflex. They essentially just added another reflex which might be more suitable in more situations. But replacing a reflex is very different from repairing a reflex. And if a replacing of personality parts in psychopath is very different from healing the psychopath. Replacing organs in the body is very different than healing the organs in the body. We actually need to think in a different way. So when we look into that reflex construct in a different way, first of all, it is necessary to realize that a reflex is defunct. It doesn't work anymore. It causes problems. And there needs to be the realization that it is actually a reflex. That requires then that people understand that the reflex is always based on a conviction, on a belief system, on an internal climate, on a physiological state of processing being. So then, once it is known that the reflex doesn't work, it needs to go back to the belief. Why should that reflex work? What is the conviction behind it? And that's where people get that notion that they're cutting in their own flesh. Because the reflexes made everything so simple, so easy, but now they have to actually get out of the car and repair it. They have to pump air in the tires. They have to add water to the battery. They have to put fuel in the container. And, oh, golly, I have to stop the car. I cannot drive. And if people don't learn to meditate, they're not used to take the car off the road. They're not used to repair the car. They're not used to refill the car. And of course, that makes things problematic for them because their reflex-driven comfort, which is also called the laziness of the devil. The devil and the reflex, I already mentioned that, is the same. Creation and heaven or angel, God, is also the same. So when you're in freedom of choice, you're in a realm of heaven. When you're in reflex, you're in devil mode. And you're in devil mode because you're in denial. You're in hell system because you're no longer knowing what's going on. It's in the out of conscious. But it is still part of your functioning. So you basically have to get to know the devil. And when you get to know the devil, that reflex that is dysfunctional, you go back to that belief system which drives that reflex. And then, of course, you discover that there is this immense emotional climate which connects to that. And when the reflex doesn't work, there is that raging emotional climate which is connected to that. Because when the reflex is backfiring, that goes back into the conviction behind it as well. So it starts to churn and bubble. And so the internal physiological mental cauldron is at the boil. And that's what is called purgatory. It is known as the defensive layer of hell, the gate of hell, the fiery gate, because these beliefs, these convictions, are actually interfering with the body. They don't chime into the body. They interfere with the body. And if people do not have the notion that their convictions and their emotions are actually both connected to the reflex, they cannot do that. Yes, there are fairy tales who explain that you need to talk to go to the dragon, fiery and steamy as the dragon is, and that you need to talk with the dragon in the old language, which means you have to go to that emotional level, the animal level in us, and go back to the moment that you that reflex, talk with it in the old language, and then you realize that why you created that reflex at that time. And then you also understand why it doesn't work at this time, because the condition changed, or you changed, or something else changed. And so once you have that, once you start to talk with the dragon, it stops spitting fire, because you actually realize that the raging emotions were your own creation because you projected something without perceiving. You were working with anger instead of love. You were working disconnected in hell instead of connected in heaven. And once you get there and step up to this fiery gate of hell, then you can open that gate. And in the Doctor Who story of the Daleks, you find that behind that gate is just a scared little beastly who shout exterminate, exterminate, but actually is immensely scared because it doesn't know what to do. And once you're at that level, it is evident that you need to take a new decision, that the reflex came out of the conviction. The conviction came out of a decision, and now it is clear that the decision which you took then is not appropriate for what's going on now. And once you do that, the walls of hell turns into the gates of paradise, because you realize that this devil, which is locked out in the wrong place, once you set it free, and it can do the things in way it can be done, that devil actually becomes the angel. You can then, in the freedom of choice domain, realize that evidently what I was doing doesn't apply. I need to take a different decision. I now take a decision for, I'm going to do it like that. Okay, I have to do it 3-4 times, because otherwise it doesn't get programmed into memory banks. But once I do that, then this process, this internal circulation, this digestive dynamic, the cauldron of the beliefs, it is like this, is set in motion. And after that, the reflex can go smoothly yet again. Car has been repaired. Bravo. So now there is this very direct, straightforward understanding that when there is something amiss at the level of the reflexes, stop blaming the others, stop blaming this yourself. Just realize that the reflex is like the dead skin cell or body. You need to see what process created it. The reflex was created by the conviction, the belief. The stronger you hold the conviction, the more the reflex becomes defined and determined. But the more brittle and the more pestilent the reflex become when it doesn't work. Look at the people around you. You just say one wrong word and then they explode. They have dysfunctional reflex systems, but they don't know it. And at the moment that you point something out, that's actually also at the level of the sub-personality part. Another personality comes in, and that corresponding set of the skill Dalek in this comes out in the story. So the reflex comes from the conviction. The conviction comes from the decision. The decision comes out of freedom of choice. And then essentially everything falls in place. The only thing that people need to do is to train that, to realize that, yes, we have the bones of belief. And yes, we have these cauldrons of convictions. And yes, we have these gates of decisions. But we also have the possibility to change our habit and not drive the car until it breaks down, but do regular routine maintenance. Take the car off the road, bring it to the garage, put it on the bridge and see if anything is dripping and ticking and whatever. And that technique, of course, is called meditation. But because people are not trained in what to look for, many people often find that meditation is difficult. It takes a lot of time. But once you realize that meditation is actually the following of the sleep cycle, the reflex repair is the same pattern following the sleep cycle, then you can see that it's always about the relationship between conscious, subconscious, unconscious, and out of conscious. Let me just envelop that story based on the sleep cycle, because you all know that. And then the sleep cycle is the equivalent of the metabolic cycle. You all experience that too. And what we're now dealing with is the same, but at the psychomental level. There's a psychomental metabolism. And in the sleep cycle, we actually need to do the same for the mind as what the sleep cycle does for the body. And that dynamic of doing for the mind what sleep does for the body is called meditation. So let me first describe the sleep cycle. It's very simple. I already mentioned it. While we are awake, we can connect it to the outer world. It's called the beta brainwave activities. It's like we are in this 3D hologram of perceptions, and we sense that and we interact with that. It's a bit like being in the driver's seat, driving through the landscape. Then you shift gear and go to the start to sleep. You close your eyes, and then the blinds of the car go down. Day goes into night. You're no longer looking at the outer world. You're now looking at what happened in the body. Of course, in the body, there's a lot of echoes going on of what happened before in the environment. And I realize the echo is closely associated with Narcissus and that story. So I just want to mention that, because then you can get closer to the understanding of why we can heal the psychopath. Once you close the eyelids, you go into the alpha brainwave. You go into this dream experience. You're no longer looking at what's happening in the outer world, but you're looking at the after images. It's a story of Plato and the cave. Actually, that story is quite literal, because we process the information of the outer world in the back of our skull. So that's where we actually perceive the reality around us. And when you close the eyes, that process in the back of the head is still going on. But that is no longer connected to doing something in the outer world. A lot of people actually have difficulties with that. They can imagine things, they can visualize things, they can understand things, but somehow they cannot put it into action because they cannot get from the alpha brainwaves to the beta brainwaves of doing things in the outer world. Most often something has been damaged, or there was a reflex created at that level. So once you understand this process, you can better navigate that too. After having closed the eyes, alpha level, dream level, the processing of the information of the mind, there is that deeper level where the mental process turns out to be connected to the process of digestion of information in the body. That's not the body level of alpha brainwaves, but the theta brainwaves of the organic cycle of the body. The organs are the gods of the Olympus. The organs digest the information. They also digest the food. And they are actually the calibrators of how you interact with the environment. Most often you don't notice. And once you need to reset things, the healing takes place at that wavelength of the theta brainwaves. Then you can actually reposition the gods with respect to each other. It's a bit like in the car, putting the piece of lead in the place so that the wheel can rotate smoothly again and the jimmying is gone. So at that theta brainwave level, that's where you then connect to the organs and how you reset your integration into your environment, how you rebalance your position. That's also connected to the zodiac and the planets, because they represent the organs and the balance in interacting with nature. And then from that theta level, you can go to the delta level of the cellular functioning, and that's basically where you're away from the world, away from the after images in the body, away from the digestive processes between the organs. And now you're simply at the cellular level, where the cell is one with the universe as a whole. And at that level is in oneness with the universe. There's nothing that needs to be processed because it already is. So that delta level, also known as the gate of death, the out of conscious level of meditation, also known as the level of Satori, where you realize that you're part of the whole, always have been. Nothing needs to be computed, nothing needs to be processed, because everything is already as it is. And so when you understand that those are the levels of meditation, you can also see that when you need to fix something in the outer world, it's at the beta level. When you need to fix something in the balance in the body, it's at the alpha level. when you need to fix something at the level of how you relate to yourself and the environment, it's at the theta level, the healing level. And when you actually need to reintegrate with all that is, it's at the delta level. So now we can see that in the sleep cycle, this is how that transition between outer and inner takes place. Just briefly, the same is what we see in sex and in sensory systems and in the food digestion. In food digestion, first you physically chew it, then in the stomach you chemically, at the molecular, you chew the materials, and then in the stomach you chemically process the molecules, and then in the duodenum you electromagnetically, using enzymes, split the molecules. You're working at the atomic level, and then what is taken into the body is the information of the food. So again, same four levels, same four transitions, same four dimensions. When you look at the sexual interaction, first there is the physical contact of sharing touch, bodies synchronizing each other. Then out of that comes a shift in the physiology. The hormones and the neurons start to shift balance. The sensation are accentuated or dissolved. It's an emotional recalibration taking place. After that comes the neurocrine, the electromagnetic. The one body and the other body are actually starting to interface in the electromagnetic cloud. So they can actually functionally become one processing unit. And then after that, in orgasm, there is the information quantum level where everything connects to the universe as a whole. And of course, there are many traditions which advocate that the more time you spend in that state of orgasm, the more society can be in a state of healing. That same transition from anatomy, physiology, neurocrinology to the consciousness, we also see in the transition of sensory perception, where the sensors at the surface of the body are points, zero dimensional. They respond to vibrational, specific vibrations by charge discharge that goes into the one-dimensional neuron that relates into the two-dimensional neural plexus, and that goes into the three-dimensional brain with actually four different dimensions of information processing. The cells, the point, the dark pulse, the neuron, the line, a Fourier code, the plexus, a plane, a Moiré array, and then in the brain, three-dimensional hologram. So now we can connect that to the reflexes, because of course in the healing of the reflexes we have the same dynamic. The reflex is, say, pinpoint focus one specific action in a specific setting. The belief system is the interface by which it triggers or activates within its specific setting. The decision is where you actually connect yes, no in the interface. And then in the freedom of choice, you have the possibility to know if that is what you want to do, yes or no. So at the freedom of choice level, as the word already says, you can be like the switch in connecting it yes or no. Then the decision taking is like the resistor. You actually turn outer and inner magnetic and electric, the one into the other. It's where you determine your interface. Then it goes into the coil, which is that internal process dynamic, the circulation of food or the circulation of the conviction in the cauldron of your belief, your conviction. And then out comes the crystallized product, the reflex, the action, which can be lead or gold, depending on if it fits, if it is valuable for the environment, or if it is just dead weight. So that's basically the end of this story. To recapitulate, in understanding the reflex system, And in understanding the reconditioning, recycling, repurposing, and repairing of reflexes, we find about the foundation for the healing of psychopathology. Because basically a psychopathological sub-entity is a reflex. It's a complex reflex, a reflex complex. But it's no other than any other ego structure. It's just a cluster of reflexes which is triggered by settings and can be to consciousness yet again. The psychopath doesn't know how to do that. The people who work with reflexes, they most often don't know how to do that. What we added to the story now is we now know how to do it. If the reflex is dysfunctional, don't blame anybody, but simply realize that there is callus on the skin of the soul, or that there is an inflammation on the skin of the soul. Something is hurting, so do something about it. Fix the reflex. Realize that the reflex, just like the anatomy comes from the physiology, the reflex comes from a conviction, a belief. Realize that that belief is probably inflamed, or it is insensitive, or it is suffering in some way. It does not connect to the outer world anymore. So fix it. And just as the physiology is the consequence of the neurocrine system, now realize that the belief, the conviction that you have came out of a decision which you took in a setting where probably you did not assess it in fullness. It's a bit like food you swallow too quickly or too hot or something. It couldn't be processed properly. And then in the body you have the stomach burn, or you have the burning stomach, whatever. There is something that needs to be resolved so that in future you don't do that. And likewise, at the level of the reflexes, you need to realize that the decision that you took was incomplete. You need to review what the conditions were. You need to compare that to other conditions. And one of the nice things is when I do this kind of reflex repair with people is that from the time that they created that reflex till now, they often have had a very long line of experiences in which that reflex stood central, but in which all kind of indicators that the reflex was not quite it were already accumulated, so that once it comes to the reviewing that decision, there's already a lot of information of how it could have been otherwise. And then that reflex already has different variations of how the intent could have been, different variations of what the contact can be like, different variations, different interpretations of what the output could be like. And that leads to a whole set of possible decisions that can be used. And that, instead of being fixed in that reflex always taking over, out of control, and always doing the same, even if it becomes destructive for body, mind, soul, spirit, it then is possible to equip that reflex with, say, a kind of enhanced intelligence that it knows better when to work and when not to turn on. Actually, you stuck accumulated consciousness to that reflex and thereby can fix it. So by doing that, you realize that having a reflex or not having a reflex is a matter of choice. And once you live at that level, that what you do and how you do it is a choice, then you can also appreciate that you now are able to play with reflexes. You can do things differently. When you meet somebody else, you don't have to do it in the way that you always do it. You can do it in a different way. You add new kinds of behavior. You add new kinds of learning. You add new kinds of interests. And that, of course, creates new personalities, creates new conduct, creates new habits, creates new sub-personae, so to call it, new personality capacities. Instead of being a caricature picture of yourself, of behaving like your parents or like somebody else, you suddenly start to change the children's drawing of what a human is with stick fingers into a more contoured, looking like you kind of picture. You realize that you can change the coloring of the picture. you are aware that you can change the dress style of the picture, and then suddenly you have a freedom to change your hairdo, to change the way you dress, to change the shoes, and use that as ways to blend into an environment, to stick out in an environment, or to catalyze an environment to look at what they know somewhat differently, so that they too can get unstuck out of their fixed behavior, out of their fixed rituals, out of their fixed beliefs, out of their fixed reflexes, and basically go out of this frozen hell state, say out of the state of mind of winter, back to spring, back to summer, because they also know that regularly they need to go in autumn and drop out and let go of what they don't need. And essentially, in the healing of the psychopath and the sociopath and narcissist, they have a piece of behavior which they would be better off without, but they are scared to do so because behind that facade which they created is a scared part of them which didn't know how to do it differently. So they need to communicate, they need to reintegrate, and that's part of the fourth story. That's not for now. For now, it is at the third story level. We now understand that we can change reflexes. We can generalize that to the changing of interest, the changing of conduct, the changing of comportment, the changing of personality, the changing of subpersonae, because the reflex is based on a conviction. Conviction is based on a decision, and the decision comes back to having freedom of choice. And the more you know that, the more you can play with reflexes. You can fix them, you can repair them, you can turn them on and off. You can mirror people in it. You can actually help people out of that. Healers do that. Spiritual healers know that it doesn't work in the behavior level on the outside, but they can actually do that on the mental, the software level inside. And when they do it on the inside by the radio wave communication, people can already sense that on the outside. That's what remote healing works on. But it is all about understanding that the reflex, say like the condenser of the electronic circuit, is at the level of the matter, the fixed state of space. Then the conviction is at the level of the physiology, of the chemistry, of the molecules, so to say. Then the decision is at the atomic level of the electromagnetic transformations. And that is where you then reintegrate yourself in being part of the whole by living by choice, also by a choice of using a reflex yes or no, and being a creator in creation.